There is but one real influence, that is, the influence of good. But to the extent that you and I admit that there is any other influence, by permitting the thoughts of the carnal mind to enter our consciousness, to that extent does our world take on the dual aspect of the mortal and the immortal. God and his creation of ideas are the only real. There is nothing else in the realm of the real but God and his ideas. But you and I create our own pictures of misery by admitting that to be real, which is not real. Matter is simply a condition of thought. Because of his understanding of this fact, Jesus was enabled to pass through closed doors, to emerge from the tomb sealed at its mouth with a stone, and to transport instantaneously the ship across the Sea of Galilee. Knowing that time and space and place are concepts of the carnal mind, Jesus could transport himself and the ship he was in instantaneously to wherever he wished to be. Now, Jesus did not move the ship in the wink of an eye across the Galilean Sea. His demonstrations of the divine power were not ones of process. In fact, his demonstrations did not involve process. His demonstrations were the spontaneous results of his knowledge that matter exists only as thought, and that therefore there were no material obstacles to be overcome. His demonstrations did not involve process. They did not involve time or space or place. His demonstrations were the overcoming of time and place and space, which did away completely with the thought or sense of process. Whatever mortal mind undertakes, whatever mortal mind presents as a condition or a fact, involves matter, time, and place. Now, time represents that which mortal mind calls duration. It represents mortal mind's process of construction. Everything that mortal mind presents as a person, place, or thing involves the process of time for construction. It involves formation, growth, periods of development, maturity, completion, etc. Everything that is real and true, everything that originates and has existence in the divine mind, is here and now created, always has existed, and always will exist, involving neither time, nor place, nor space. We can prove, as we have many times, that matter is simply a condition of thought by silencing thought. The very moment a man ceases to think, he ceases to be conscious of matter. Change a man's thought, and his concept of matter changes. A man becomes unconscious, we will assume, for some reason or other. What becomes of his material world? It simply isn't. He hasn't any world. His material world exists only in his own thinking. Now, change a man's thinking by the process of, we will say, hypnotism. What becomes of his world? It does not disappear. It changes. The hypnotist, through his belief in the power of mortal mind, and his belief in minds many and wills many, and through the mental permission of his victim or subject, may enter the mentality or consciousness of another and replace his thinking with that of the hypnotist. He can, through his false beliefs and those of the subject, inject his thinking into the consciousness of his victim, to the complete exclusion of any thought the victim may have. In fact, a hypnotist may think for another, showing conclusively that mind is not in the brain of an individual. Mrs. Eddy, in explaining the operations of mortal mind or animal magnetism, refers to this power of the hypnotist and shows how frail a thing mortal mind is. She says in Science and Health, quote, "The Christian Scientist demonstrates that divine mind heals, while the hypnotist dispossesses the patient of his individuality in order to control him. No person is benefited by yielding his mentality to any mental despotism or malpractice." Close quote. The hypnotist, entering with his own thought the thought or mentality of another, and substituting his own thinking for that of another, may cause the victim to see an entirely different world from that which you and I might see under the same circumstances or in the same place. The hypnotist may suggest anything to his victim, with the result that the victim will believe it to be part of his experience or world. The victim of a hypnotist may be made to think that he is existing in a frigid climate in midsummer. He may be made to think he is suffering physical pain or enjoying physical pleasure when neither of those conditions exist. He may be made to believe that land is water and water is land, and his conviction as to these conditions is just as real as your or my conviction that what we see is true. There is no difference in reality between the convictions of the victim of the hypnotist, the convictions of the demented person, and your and my convictions right here and now. There is no difference in cause or effect between the hallucinations of the demented, the misconceptions of the hypnotized person, and your or my convictions here and now. The world that you and I are conscious of as animate or inanimate matter is no more real than the belief of the demented person that he is a reincarnation of Napoleon Bonaparte, or the conviction of the hypnotized person that he is suffering bodily pain without a cause. The intense and agonizing pain which the hypnotized person may momentarily be conscious of is no more real than any pain which you or I might experience in our sane moments. The pain which you and I might experience as the result of a cut, a bruise, or a fracture is no more in matter than the pain suffered by the victim of the hypnotist. There is no pain in either case. The thought is the cause in both instances. And where does that thought come from? Not from within us, because as we know, mortal mind does not exist within mortal man. Mortal thought comes from without. It comes from what we call the one carnal mind, which exists outside mortal man. Now, in the case of the hypnotized man, if the victim had a knowledge of Christian Science, if he knew, in fact, that there is but one mind, and that that mind is God, outside man, never subject to any change or the claims of mortality, he could prevent the operations of the hypnotizer from having any control over him. By refusing to admit the thought of the hypnotist into his own consciousness, on the ground that there is but one mind, and that that mind is God, good, he could defeat the aims of the hypnotist and protect himself from the belief that he could be controlled by anything but his own thinking. It is safe to say that generally speaking, there is no one here today who could be made the victim of a willful or professional hypnotist, because he would refuse to recognize any power apart from God. Yet, I think it would be safe to say that a large percentage of what we do daily, and certainly everything that we see, feel, taste, smell, and hear, are manifestations of hypnotism in one form or another, or animal magnetism. In all her writings, Mrs. Eddy uses hypnotism or animal magnetism interchangeably in many instances. One is the same as the other. She points out to us that all material existence is animal magnetism or hypnotism. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, "As named in Christian Science, animal magnetism or hypnotism is the specific term for error or mortal mind." Close quote. So you see that animal magnetism, as the term is used by Mrs. Eddy in connection with Christian Science, is the same as hypnotism, and her use of this term animal magnetism is not simply a usage of words without a reason or cause. The term animal magnetism is used because it more properly and clearly expresses material existence than anything else. The term animal magnetism is a term which rightly and clearly reveals the nature of the material universe, and is not simply an artful use of words to attract attention. It signifies the nature of the material. It designates its substanceless existence. It signifies the elusiveness of matter. One definition of animal in the dictionaries is pertaining to the soul or will. Animal is in reality derived from the Latin word animus, meaning mind. So, while the word animal in one sense refers to animate matter or animate creatures, the basic meaning of the word animal, that from which it is derived and whereby it receives the definition of mind or will as given above, is mind. So, the word animal, in its last analysis, refers and pertains to the mental rather than to the physical. The dictionaries use very freely the term animal magnetism. It is not a word coined by Mrs. Eddy. It is Mrs. Eddy's adaptation of the well-known phrase of animal magnetism that makes it unique and useful in outlining the mental nature of the material. Magnetism, in the dictionaries, is described as the power to attract, power to excite the feelings of, and to gain the affections. So, the term animal magnetism has nothing to do with matter. In fact, it leads away from matter into the mental, and gives us a clear and concise statement that matter is not material, but is the mental, or the outcome of mortal mind's power to attract. In the dictionaries, animal magnetism is used interchangeably with mesmerism, just as Mrs. Eddy has used these two terms. So, with the understanding that the term animal magnetism means the power of the mortal mind, or will, to attract or to deceive, we can begin to see why Mrs. Eddy used this term in her designation of all evil. Mesmerism, or animal magnetism, as the terms are used together in the dictionaries and by Mrs. Eddy, means the hypnotic state of the human mind, which conceives matter, sin, evil, etc., as real. Animal magnetism, hypnotism, and mesmerism all signify the same thing. Animal magnetism, Mrs. Eddy has designated as all matter, all evil, all error of every name or nature. She has done this because it designates the mental nature of all these conditions. It brings out clearly, in two brief words, the fact that all matter, all material existence, is a state of hypnotism or mesmerism, and that when this hypnotic state is broken, men will awaken to their true state of being, unfettered by matter or the claims of mortal mind. Now, where does this mesmerism or hypnotic state originate? Not from the divine mind, certainly. It must come from what we call the mortal or carnal mind, which mind exists outside of mortal man. When mortal mind is accepted in and dwells in human consciousness, that results in, or is, a state of hypnotism. And through this state of hypnotism or mesmerism comes the belief of intelligent matter. Matter existence, then, is a state of hypnotism. And when the hypnotic state is broken, matter disappears. Therefore, your or my material existence is a state of hypnotism. That hypnotic state exists because we admit into our consciousness thoughts of the carnal mind, which come to us from without and which do not originate within us at all. And because these thoughts do not originate in us, but come to us from outside ourselves, we see how our material existence becomes a state of self-hypnotism or self-mesmerism. We have the power within ourselves to accept or reject these hypnotic thoughts if we wish to, just as certainly as we have the power to accept or resist the suggestions of the professional hypnotist. The professional hypnotist operates with the carnal mind alone. He operates with that mind which claims to exist outside himself as one mind. He claims to operate with the same mind which argues to you and me that there is matter, sin, sickness, poverty, and the like. Therefore, the mind which puts one person under a hypnotic spell and makes him believe that he is suffering physical pain without a cause is the same mind that tells you and me that there is a material body which can sin, suffer, and enjoy. As the mind which is used by the hypnotist is the same mind which makes you and me believe we live in matter, etc., the effect in both instances must be the same. The cause being the same, the effect must be the same. Therefore, that consciousness which argues to you and me that there is matter, sin, sickness, and death is just as much a state of hypnotism as the consciousness which is manipulated by the professional hypnotist. The hallucinations of a demented person are no more real and are just as real as the hallucination in which you and I are when our physical senses tell us that we see, feel, taste, smell, and hear matter. There is no more reality in this dream of matter in which you and I are now struggling than there is in the hallucination of the demented person. Both come from the same mind, and the effect in one case is no more real than the effect in the other case. So let none of us fool ourselves that we have very much on the poor fellow who is incarcerated behind the bars of an insane asylum. Our condition is the hallucination of what one mortal mind would call a normal mind. The insane person's condition is the hallucination of what mortal mind would call an abnormal mind. They are both hallucinations. The hallucinations of the sane person are what might be called primary beliefs. The hallucinations of the demented might be called secondary beliefs. One is no more real than the other. The universe of a sane person is the effect of hypnotism in the first degree. The universe of the insane person is the effect of hypnotism in the second degree. The universe of the sane person represents the hypnotic state of the normal mind. The universe of the insane person represents the hypnotic state of a sick mind. The only difference between the two is one of degree. The only difference is that in the one case there is a sick mind, and in the other case there is no sickness. The effect in one is no more real than the effect in the other. Both are examples or expressions of animal magnetism, hypnotism, or mesmerism, as you wish, and one represents no more of God than the other. One represents a little more of error, and that is all. All material existence, then, is a state of mental illusion, which Mrs. Eddy has called animal magnetism, or hypnotism, or mesmerism. Matter, everything that you and I see, feel, taste, smell, and hear, exists, then, only as illusion, a dream. The experiences which you and I have in a sleeping dream are no more real than the experiences you and I have when awake. That is, the experiences which you and I are cognizant of as a result of seeing, feeling, tasting, smelling, and hearing are no more real than the visions we have in a dream. Material existence is a dream just as certainly as the experiences you and I have in sleep. They are both states of mesmerism, hypnotism, or animal magnetism. One's body can suffer or enjoy in a dream just as definitely as it can when one is awake. There is no more reality in pain in the one instance than there is in the other. Both are manifestations of the one carnal mind existing, or claiming to exist, as one mind, outside of man, belonging to no man, but common to all men. The very fact that this mind is subject to change or unconsciousness is complete evidence of its non-existence.